Chapter 2. All right, candidates, this way, and look lively! The speaker, or more correctly the shouter, was Martin, secretary to Baron Arold. As his voice echoed around the anteroom, the five wards rose uncertainly from the long wooden benches where they had been seated. Suddenly nervous, now that the day had finally arrived, they began to shuffle forward, each one reluctant to be the first through the great iron-bound door that Martin now held open for them. "Come on! Come on!" Martin bellowed impatiently. Alice finally elected to lead the way, as Will had guessed she would. The others followed the willowy blonde girl. Now that someone had decided to lead, the rest of them were content to follow. Will looked around curiously as he entered the Baron's study. He'd never been in this part of the castle before. This tower, containing the administrative section and the Baron's private apartments, was seldom visited by those of low rank, such as castle wards. The room was huge. The ceiling seemed to tower above him, and the walls were constructed of massive stone blocks, fitted together with only the barest lines of mortar between them. On the eastern wall was a huge window space, open to the elements, but with massive wooden shutters that could be closed in the event of bad weather. It was the same window he had seen through last night, he realized. Today, sunlight streamed in and fell on the huge oak table that Baron Arold used as a desk. "Come on now! Stand in line! Stand in line!" Martin seemed to be enjoying his moment of authority. The group shuffled slowly into line, and he studied them, his mouth twisted in disapproval. "In size place, tallest this end." He indicated the end where he wanted the tallest of the five to stand. Gradually, the group rearranged itself. Horace, of course, was the tallest. After him, Alice took her position. Then George, half a head shorter than she and painfully thin. He stood in his usual stoop-shouldered posture. Will and Jenny hesitated. Jenny smiled at Will and gestured for him to go before her, even though she was possibly an inch taller than he was. That was typical of Jenny. She knew how Will agonized over the fact that he was the smallest of all the castle wards. As Will moved into the line, Martin's voice stopped him. "Not you! The girls next." Jenny shrugged apologetically and moved into the place Martin had indicated. Will took the last place in the line, wishing Martin hadn't made his lack of height so apparent. "Come on, smarten up, smarten up. Let's see you at attention there," Martin continued, then broke off as a deep voice interrupted him.
"I don't believe that's totally necessary, Martin."
It was Baron Arold, who had entered unobserved by way of a smaller door behind his massive desk. Now it was Martin who brought himself to what he considered to be a position of attention, with his skinny elbows held out from his sides, his heels forced together so that his unmistakably bowed legs were widely separated at the knees, and his head thrown back. Baron Arold raised his eyes to heaven. Sometimes his secretary's zeal on these occasions could be a little overwhelming. The Baron was a big man, broad in shoulder and waist and heavily muscled, as was necessary for a knight of the realm. It was well known, however, that Baron Arold was fond of his food and drink, so his considerable bulk was not totally attributable to muscle. He had a short, neatly trimmed black beard that, like his hair, was beginning to show the traces of grey that went with his 42 years. He had a strong jaw, a large nose, and dark, piercing eyes under heavy brows. It was a powerful face, but not an unkind one, Will thought. There was a surprising hint of humour in those dark eyes. Will had noted it before, on the occasions when Arold had made his infrequent visits to the wards' quarters to see how their lessons and personal development were progressing.
"Sir!"
Martin said at top volume, causing the Baron to wince slightly.
"The candidates are assembled."
"I can see that," Baron Arold replied patiently. "Perhaps you might be good enough to ask the craftmasters to step in as well."
"Sir," Martin responded, making an attempt to click his heels together. As he was wearing shoes of a soft, pliable leather, the attempt was doomed to failure. He marched toward the main door of the study, all elbows and knees. Will was reminded of a rooster. As Martin laid his hand on the door handle, the Baron stopped him once more.
"Martin," he said softly. As the secretary turned an inquiring look back at him, he continued in the same quiet tone. "Ask them. Don't bellow at them. Craftmasters don't like that."
"Yes, sir," said Martin, looking somewhat deflated. He opened the door, and, making an obvious effort to speak in a lower tone, said, "Craftmasters, the Baron is ready now."
The craft school heads entered the room in no particular order of precedence. As a group, they admired and respected one another and so rarely stood on strict ceremonial procedure. Sir Rodney, head of the battle school, came first. Tall and broad-shouldered like the Baron, he wore the standard battle dress of chainmail shirt under a white surcoat emblazoned with his own crest, a scarlet wolf's head. He had earned that crest as a young man, fighting the wolf ships of the Scandian sea raiders who constantly harried the kingdom's east coast. He wore a sword belt and sword, of course. No knight would be seen in public without one. He was around the Baron's age, with blue eyes and a face that would have been remarkably handsome if it weren't for the massively broken nose. He sported an enormous moustache, but unlike the Baron, he had no beard. Next came Ulf, the horsemaster, responsible for the care and training of the castle's mighty battle horses. He had keen brown eyes, strong muscular forearms and heavy wrists. He wore a simple leather vest over his woolen shirt and leggings. Tall riding boots of soft leather reached up past his knees. Lady Pauline followed Ulf. Slim, grey-haired and elegant, she had been a considerable beauty in her youth and still had the grace and style to turn men's heads. Lady Pauline, who had been awarded the title in her own right for her work in foreign policy for the kingdom, was head of the diplomatic service in Redmond. Baron Arold regarded her abilities highly, and she was one of his close confidants and advisers. Arold often said that girls made the best recruits to the diplomatic service. They tended to be more subtle than boys, who gravitated naturally to battle school. And while boys constantly looked to physical means as the way of solving problems, girls could be depended on to use their wits. It was perhaps only natural that Nigel, the scribe-master, followed close behind Lady Pauline. They had been discussing matters of mutual interest while they waited for Martin to summon them. Nigel and Lady Pauline were close friends, as well as professional colleagues. It was Nigel's trained scribes who prepared the official documents and communiques that were so often delivered by Lady Pauline's diplomats. He also advised on the exact wording of such documents, having an extensive background in legal matters. Nigel was a small, wiry man with a quick, inquisitive face that reminded Will of a ferret. His hair was glossy black, his features were thin, and his dark eyes never ceased roaming the room. Master Chubb, the castle cook, came in last of all. Inevitably, he was a fat, round-bellied man, wearing a cook's white jacket and tall hat. He was known to have a terrible temper that could flare as quickly as oil spilled on a fire, and most of the wards treated him with considerable caution. Florid-faced, and with red, rapidly receding hair, Master Chubb carried a wooden ladle with him wherever he went. It was an unofficial staff of office. It was also used quite often as an offensive weapon, landing with a resounding crack on the heads of careless, forgetful or slow-moving kitchen apprentices. Alone among the group, Jenny saw Chubb as something of a hero. It was her avowed intention to work for him and learn his skills, wooden ladle or no wooden ladle. There were other craftmasters, of course. The armourer and the blacksmith were too. But only those craftmasters who currently had vacancies for new apprentices would be represented today.
"The craft masters are assembled, sir," Martin said, his voice rising in volume. Martin seemed to equate volume and the importance of the occasion in direct proportion. Once again, the Baron raised his eyes to heaven.
"So I see," he said quietly, then added in a more formal tone, "Good morning, Lady Pauline. Good morning, gentlemen."
They replied, and the Baron turned to Martin once more.
"Perhaps we might proceed?"
Martin nodded several times, consulted a sheaf of notes he held in one hand, and marched to confront the line of candidates.
"Right, the Baron's waiting. The Baron's waiting. Who's first?"
Will, eyes down, shifting nervously from one foot to the other, suddenly had a strange sensation that someone was watching him. He looked up and actually started with surprise as he met the dark, unfathomable gaze of Holt, the ranger. Will hadn't seen him come into the room. He realized that the mysterious figure must have slipped in through a side door while everyone's attention was on the craftmasters as they made their entrance. Now he stood behind the Baron's chair and slightly to one side. Dressed in his usual brown and grey clothes, and wrapped in his long, mottled grey and green ranger's cloak. Holt was an unnerving person. He had a habit of coming up on you when you least expected it, and you never heard his approach. The superstitious villagers believed that rangers practiced a form of magic that made them invisible to ordinary people. Will wasn't sure if he believed that, but he wasn't sure he disbelieved it either. He wondered why Holt was here today. He wasn't recognized as one of the craftmasters, and, as far as Will knew, he hadn't attended a choosing session prior to this one. Abruptly, Holt's gaze cut away from him, and it was as if a light had been turned off. Will realized that Martin was talking once more. He noticed that the secretary had a habit of repeating statements, as if he were followed by his own personal echo.
"Now then, who's first? Who's first?"
The Baron sighed audibly.
"Why don't we take the first in line?" he suggested in a reasonable tone, and Martin nodded several times.
"Of course, my lord, of course. First in line, step forward and face the Baron."
After a moment's hesitation, Horace stepped forward out of the line and stood at attention. The Baron studied him for a few seconds.
"Name?" he said,
and Horace answered, stumbling slightly over the correct method of address for the Baron.
"Horace Altman, sir, my lord."
"And do you have a preference, Horace?" the Baron asked,
with the air of one who knows what the answer is going to be before hearing it.
"Battle school, sir," Horace said firmly.
The Baron nodded. He'd expected as much. He glanced at Rodney, who was studying the boy thoughtfully, assessing his suitability.
"Battlemaster?" the Baron said.
Normally he would address Rodney by his first name, not his title. But this was a formal occasion. By the same token, Rodney would usually address the Baron as Sir. But on a day like today, my lord was the proper form. The big knight stepped forward, his chain mail and spurs chinking slightly as he moved closer to Horace. He eyed the boy up and down, then moved behind him. Horace's head started to turn with him.
"Still?" Sir Rodney said,
and the boy ceased his movement, staring straight ahead.
"Looks strong enough, my lord, and I can always use new trainees."
He rubbed one hand over his chin.
"You ride, Horace Altman?"
A look of uncertainty crossed Horace's face as he realized this might be a hurdle to his selection.
"Well, no, sir, I..."
He was about to add that Castle Wards had little chance to learn to ride, but Sir Rodney interrupted him.
"No matter. That can be taught."
The big knight looked at the Baron and nodded.
"Very well, my lord. I'll take him for battle school, subject to the usual 3-month probationary period."
The Baron made a note on a sheet of paper before him and smiled briefly at the delighted and very relieved youth before him.
"Congratulations, Horace. Report to battle school tomorrow morning. 8 o'clock sharp."
"Yes, sir," Horace replied, grinning widely. He turned to Sir Rodney and bowed slightly. "Thank you, sir."
"Don't thank me yet," the knight replied cryptically. "You don't know what you're in for."